So our topic today is mindfulness. Very excited about this topic, mindfulness, because it's one which I have heard about often from my teacher, Dr. David Pelkovitz. So Dr. Pelkovitz, he talks about mindfulness, and actually if you're interested in this discussion of his, one of many, so you can go online. There is an online journal called Klal Perspectives, K-L-A-L, Klal Perspectives. And Dr. Pelkovitz has an essay in the fall 2015 edition. The title of the essay is Isolation versus Inoculation, Guidelines for Parents in Meeting the Challenge of Digital Technology. It's a great essay, not that Dr. Pelkovitz needs my haskama. It's a great essay about dealing with technology. A lot of it has to do with technology and children, technology and adolescents. So how we relate to technology today, because it's so different than what it used to be. And in the context of this discussion, so he has some recommendations, some discussions when he talks about mindfulness. So at the toward the end, he talks about something that is the challenge of being distraction. He quotes a book called The Distraction Addiction. So in that context, he talks about the idea of mindfulness, which he calls a teachable skill that directly addresses the emotional state of what he calls pizur and mihira. Pizur is, I would guess you would call it like fractionalism, like being all over the place, pizur, spread out, and mihira, being too fast. And he says, adolescents and young adults are increasingly open to developing skills such as meditation and mindfulness. When I was involved in co-developing a treatment for abused adolescents, one of our more striking findings was the openness of even the toughest teens to learning how to do mindful exercises. So in the context of this digital challenge, Dr. Pelkovitz raises the issue of mindfulness. And then he says, yeshiva high school students are also surprisingly receptive to tefillah programs that incorporate the development of mindfulness skills as an approach to improving kavana during davening. And then he gives two different references to books as they relate to kavana and meditation and davening. So Dr. Pelkovitz is addressing this issue, the issue of the role of mindfulness in a person's development in Avodas Hashem. And of course, it doesn't just apply to adolescents. It applies to us, generally speaking. So I set about to think about mindfulness, and I came upon this New York Times Magazine article from April of 2015 by a woman named Virginia Heffernan, who herself, if you Google her, she has some interesting talks online, Virginia Heffernan, and it's called The Muddied Meaning of Mindfulness. So apparently, the Torah of mindfulness is not so pashut, because you have to figure out what the word mindfulness means, which is apparently not so simple. Originally, in 1881, there was a guy, Thomas William, how would you pronounce that name?
Rhys Davids.
It's spelled R-H-Y-S. We have an attorney here who says that's how it's supposed to be spelled. I have no idea. I've never seen that name. I've never seen that name before.
Welsh?
Ah, Gavaldik. We have someone Welsh in the colo, so he could have helped us. He who was traveling, found himself in what we call now Sri Lanka, and encouraged, found some Buddhist chevra. It's a long story, but became basically like the dayan for the local Buddhist chevra, this English Welsh man.
He's Jewish, or?
No. He's a British magistrate who pulled out the word mindfulness as a synonym for attention. Attention. That's the first definition of mindfulness.
He invented the term?
No, he didn't invent the term. Apparently, the term appeared much earlier, but he was using it as an approximate translation for a Buddhist concept called sati. I don't know. I'm not a Buddhist follower. So Sati...
They didn't teach that in Welsh.
No, they didn't get... The English they did, Buddhism they didn't. Apparently Buddhists consider this the first of the seven factors of enlightenment, which I apologize, I hope this is not Avodah Zarah. I don't know if it is, but if it is, we shouldn't be doing it. Yeah, and Sean is recording it for posterity. No audio, though. So apparently it means more nearly, quote, memory of the present. Memory of the present. And then this became, in the 1970s, a guy by the name of a molecular biologist in New England, and also a Zen Buddhist, used this and popularized it. His name is John Kabat-Zinn. Again? Oh, yeah? So so this guy is very into teaching. He's the head guy now. So apparently then he was
read the book, wherever you go, there you are.
So she discusses here in the article, under the cover of this innocuous word, Buddhist meditation knows its way into a secular audience bent on personal growth and even success strategies. And then he's got more books in 94, Wherever You Go, There You Are, Mindfulness, Mindful Meditation, Everyday Life. So she has a discussion in the further pieces in this article about exactly, you know, what that means, you know, how mindfulness is interpreted in different ways in different contexts today. So apparently at the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland, they had a mindfulness meditation to promote general well-being. I suspect, though, if you're attending that conference, you should have pretty good well-being. You're the top 1%. But
they're probably pretty distracted.
Exactly. So on the other hand, so it could be that at the World Economic Forum, they probably need more mindfulness than others. It's a good Shiloh. I don't know. Anyway, and then, of course, Phil Jackson, president of the New York Knicks, used to be from, right, before the Lakers, he's from Chicago, the great Chicago coach. There's a mindfulness training program that's very logical and calm, quiet, and we've started the process with this team. Phil Jackson said.
Which team is he referring to?
The Knicks.
Oh.
So anyway, it's a very interesting article about the different ways that you can understand the word mindfulness and how to apply it and the quiet. So I happened to notice last week that Hillel Torah is actually doing a mindfulness project. So in the beginning of the first page of the inside cover, I just gave you a reference to the Calm Classroom website that they're using. Rabbi Linzer tried to encourage me to do a mindfulness exercise in our shir. I decided we're not going to do it today because I'm not trained. Although, Mara, would you, you're trained in mindfulness?
No, not this one.
Okay, fine.
Okay.
So, full disclosure.
For next week.
For next week.
Can we think of this as like something akin to yoga?
So, I don't know. I've never done yoga. I'm also generally not so pliable, so I would be careful if I tried to do yoga. But the idea of being mindful in the different ways that it means, however you're going to interpret it, is something that, what they're pointing out here, it's being in the moment.
Yes.
That's what we started with, that the definition began with memory of the present, being focused on what you're doing now. So this idea certainly is very important for us to think about in Avodas Hashem, right? We come back to where we started in terms of Dr. Pelkovitz talking about in technology, because technology, you can be here, but you're not really here. You know, sometimes you're talking to somebody. It used to be that when you spoke to somebody, generally speaking, they were there when you were talking to them. And even if they weren't there fully, they were at least looking you in the eye. Right? Sometimes you could tell when you're looking at them in the eye and they're not there, you know that. But today, when I'm talking to someone on the phone, it looks like I'm here, but I'm really not here. I'm much more over there than I am over here. That's part of the challenge about talking and driving, which is a challenge, because even if you're hands-free, thinking about how much you're here and how much you're there, and that, by the way, is not just about talking. That's also about fiddling with the radio and spacing out or whatever else. But the point is that we are, as Dr. Pelkovitz says, we're living in a time where being mindful or being conscious of the present, the memory of the present, being focused on what we're doing right now becomes more and more challenging. Well, if we're trying to lead lives of meaning, which is what Yiddishkeit is all about, well, where's the meaning if we're not being mindful? So the answer is there are a lot of things that we're supposed to be doing, and we're doing those things. And the question becomes then, well, does that create enough meaning? Just by doing the things, is that meaningful? You know, somebody, they take a lulav and an esrog, the four minim, and they shake them around, and they fulfill their obligation of dalav minim. So that's great. And they get a mitzvah, and they affect, you know, all kinds of spiritual worlds in the heavens. The Ribbono Shel Olam, you know, sees the Rubik's, you know, like the Rube Goldberg, like this big, gigantic Rubik's cube that moves. You move one little piece, and everything else gets affected, and the whole, all of the these Olamos Elyonim is very important. But is that the same as being mindful when you're shaking the lulav? And what if a person is shaking the lulav, or what if lighting the Shabbos candles, or what if davening or saying Shemoneh Esrei, whatever it is lacking mindfulness? Are you accomplishing the same thing? Can you really say that that's the same mitzvah? So this brings us to this core question, which is a huge topic in halacha, which is, we're going to just scratch the surface of it a little bit today, is the question of what we call kavana. Now, kavana itself is something that needs to be studied, just in terms of how you define it. We'll talk about that a little bit, because kavana can mean different things. There isn't necessarily one uniform definition for kavana in every context. So let's start with a Gemara that appears in Maseches Rosh Hashanah, not in the packet, just Baal Peh. The Gemara has a question, which is what we just explained in Talmudic terms. The Gemara wants to know, mitzvos tzrichos kavana, or not? Does the performance of a mitzvah require kavana? Which, for the fun of it, we'll call it mindfulness. Because we saw mindfulness can mean different things, so let's just call it mindfulness. We could call it attention, we could call it intent, we could call it focus, we could call it meaning. Let's just say mindfulness for argument's sake. Does the performance of a mitzvah require mindfulness? So obviously the question of the Gemara is that there is a threshold at which you say that you have fulfilled your obligation, and then beyond that you're good. Below that threshold you simply have not fulfilled it. So for example, if a person hears four shofar blasts, so those blasts are a ma'isa mitzvah. You are engaged in the process, the action of a mitzvah, but you haven't met the required threshold to say that you fulfilled the mitzvah. Okay, it is a chefta shel mitzvah. And there's a good question that Acharonim discuss. What if, God forbid, a person is in such a horrible state, Rahman al-Islam, they only have half a kazayas of matzah, that's it. And there were such times in Jewish history, not so long ago, where Jews on Pesach could only get a crumb of matzah. Do you get a kiyum of matzah at all by only eating a piece of matzah at less than a kazayas? Because the mitzvah is, achila means a kazayas. So to hear, I'm not saying that if a person is not mindful, they didn't engage in a ma'isa ha-mitzvah. It's just that if you say that mitzvah strichos kavana, you did what looks like a mitzvah, but it's not adequate. It would be the equivalent, perhaps, of taking three minim in your dalet minim instead of four. Okay? So the mitzvah strichos kavana debate is whether or not kavana, the intent, which we'll have to see what that means, whether that mindfulness is an indispensable part of the kiyum ha-mitzvah, of the fulfillment of the mitzvah. So the Gemara presents two different opinions in the Amoraim. This is the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, Daf Yud Ches. Now all of this is a beautiful preamble to the source that you see on page 1 in the first packet, in the main packet, which is the Rambam in Hilchos Kriyat Shema. Because we have been, over the last few weeks, we're using this Rambam, the structure of the Yad HaChazaka, as the frame for our learning this year. And actually, it's a perfect time, because this is the beginning of Sefer Ahava, the book of Ahava. The Rambam deals first with Hilchos Kriyat Shema, and then he deals with Hilchos Tefillah. And this is, you might argue, the locus classicus, one of the most important places where the Rambam discusses this issue about Kavana, Mitzvah Srichas Kavana. So we're going to focus on the Rambam. We're not going to focus on the Gemara, we're going to focus on the Rambam. The Rambam tells in the beginning of Perek Beis Hilchos Kriyat Shema, HaKoriya Shema, someone who reads the Shema, V'lo Kivein Libo B'Pasuk Rishon, and he did not have, his heart did not have Kavana on the first verse Shehu, that is, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, Lo Yatza Yedei Chovaso. He did not fulfill his obligation. So then the Rambam continues, V'hashar, and the rest of Shema, Im Lo Kivein Yatza. If you didn't have Kavana for the rest of Shema, Vahafta, and Vahaya, and Vayomer, if you didn't have Kavana, you still fulfilled your obligation of the recitation of Shema, because we know that Shema has, in addition to just Shema, has three paragraphs. Then the Rambam adds one more section, and this is from the Mishnah in Brachos and Daf Yud Gimel Amud Aleph. Afilu hayakori batorah kedarko. Even if you were reading a Torah in the normal way, o magia es aparshus, or you were magia, lagia means to fix, editing, a parsha, like a sofer, ha'elu, ba'onas kriya, you happen to be working on the parsha of Kriya Shema when it comes time for Shema, you're a sofer, you're fixing some random pasuk somewhere, it happens to be the pasuk of Kriya Shema, ba'onas kriya, at the time of the reading, yatza, you fulfilled your obligation. Vahu, the Rambam says, shekivein libo b'pasuk rishon. As long as you had kavana for the first verse for Shema Yisrael. Okay? So that's the Rambam's ruling based on the Gemara in Brachos Daf Yud Gimel Amud Aleph, going over Daf Yud Gimel Amud Beis. The core verse of this Rambam, the core comment of the Rambam, is based on a statement of Reb Meir, who says, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, ad kan tzricha kavana salev. Until that point, you require Kavana Salev, and that was the first statement to the Rambam. But the Rambam then added the second statement, which went back to Yud Gimel Amud Aleph, where it said, a guy, a sofer, is fixing the letters of, I don't know, Echad, in the Sefer Torah, and he just read the whole line, Shema Yisrael, Shem Elokeinu, Shem Echad. So the Gemara, in that context, says, Shema Mina Mitzvah Srichas Kavana. It sounds like you have to have Kavana. Why would you think you need to have Kavana? Because the Rambam said, based on the Mishnah, that im kivein libo, if you had kavana, you were yotze. But if you didn't have kavana, you're not yotze. So doesn't it sound like you have to have kavana? So the Gemara says, no. No. Everybody agrees. Even according to the Manda Amar, even according to the opinion, who says mitzvahs don't require kavana, there is a basic threshold that everyone agrees is essential. There is a certain consciousness which is minimal according to everybody. Now, this concept exists elsewhere in halacha, and there are many, as we'll see, there are many levels of what it means to talk about consciousness. But to borrow a term, and it comes up here in context, but I'll give you an example from somewhere else. We call this action called mesasek. You have a violation of something. Let's say someone accidentally kills somebody. Reuven kills Shimon, which is usually what happens. Reuven kills Shimon. So Reuven could kill Shimon in a couple of ways. One is it could be intentional. Reuven is the rotzeach. He murders Shimon. He takes out a gun and he kills him. Then you can have Reuven be a rotzeach b'shogeg. What is shogeg? Growing up, we used to mistranslate, at least I mistranslated shogeg. I always thought growing up that shogeg was an accident. That's not 100% precise. Shogeg is, I was schlepping up something on my roof, but I wasn't super careful. And what happened? I dropped it. So when we're kids, we call that an accident. So we call shogeg an accident, but that's not really an accident. That's really carelessness, exactly. So I'm sure there's a big legal distinction between these two. In the insurance world, there's definitely a big distinction between shogeg, which is carelessness, and onus, which is accident, i.e. act of God. Onus means I was coerced into doing it. It wasn't that I was negligent. It's that I was standing, you know, somebody was standing at the edge of a building next to somebody else, and some third party comes, grabs the first guy, and pushes him so that he topples over the next guy, and he falls off the Empire State Building. So the second guy who actually pushed the victim, that's not shogeg. They're standing on the observation deck. That's not a show gig. He's being careful. Nobody in their normal right state of mind would ever anticipate that somebody else would come and shove you. You know, that's totally onus. That's act of God. Okay? But then there's something else. There's something called misasig. On Shabbos, let's say somebody walks into the bathroom. They wake up in the morning. They walk into the bathroom. They went to go to wash the Tehillas Siddim, wash Negelwasser. On the way in, just their reflex flicks on the light switch. They wash the Tehillas Siddim. They go back, start getting dressed. And then they realize 10 minutes later, you know, I think the bathroom light is on. Somebody must have turned it on, but there's nobody else up. You realize, oh, I turned on the bathroom light. How did you turn on the bathroom light? You just did it reflexively. So that's misasik. You had no intention at all. It just happened by the by. You know, I went to, the Gemara has a discussion, there's a difference between misasik, kol hatorah kula, misasik, there's a lot of levels, misasik, but on Shabbos, I go to pick up, there's some flowers on the ground, I go to pick it up, and then accidentally, I pick up, it's a big distinction, if I pick up other flowers that are attached, other flowers detached, it was totally unintentional, completely unintentional. So that's called misasik when it comes to averus, and we have a similar kind of concept when it comes to attentiveness in mitzvos. If you did a mitzvah without any recognition, totally just this kind of pat in passing, there's got to be, if I was more articulate, there would be a better way for me to say it, just without any attentiveness at all. You perhaps weren't even aware that you were doing it. And if you were, maybe it's on some unconscious, subconscious just level, that's, everybody agrees, that's not a mitzvah. That's not a mitzvah. So here's going to be the question. What does it mean when the Gemara says, what do you mean? You're reading it. So the Gemara says, no. The Gemara rejects it by saying, well, no, in this case, you're not having kavana to do the mitzvah at all. It is, Rashi says, Bekori lahagia. The Gemara says, Bekori lahagia, you're reading just to fix the letters. Because if you're just reading to fix the letters, that's everybody agrees, that's no mitzvah. Why not? What is so low about that? So Rashi says, Kori is lahagia as a sefer im yesh bo tos, to see if it's an errant book. Da'afil l'kriya nami lo mechavin. You're not even planning on reading it. You're just saying it, just so you can see, is there a mistake in there? You're a sofer, they give it to you to fix, make sure it's right. You're just reading, so did you say Kriya Shema? I mean, technically you said it, but Rashi says you said it without ever thinking about saying something. You just thought because you're searching for something. Tosfos says, no, I don't agree with that. Tosfos says, that's okay. Tosfos here in Dibra Maschil, Bekor Lahagia, he says, Al Karchach, Nira Lahagia, he says, Tema, Akat Yakarle, he says, I read it. He says, that's enough mindfulness. If you are a sofer and you're reading it to just check it, but you're actually saying the words, as you're going through it, he says, that's enough. So it must be that when you read it, Tosfos says, you read it, Kolomar, Likros Kedin Nikudasan, the Kichsivasan Karile. You're reading it in a way that is grammatically incorrect. Meaning, we know there are things called Chaseros and Yaseros, additions and subtract, those Vavs that are extras. So you're reading it in a way that doesn't actually fit the correct pronunciation. So that's why you're not being Yotze. But Tosfos thinks, you see what we're getting at here, there's already an argument about what is the minimal threshold. Is there any bottom out? So Tosfos says, the bottom, well, as long as you had intention of reading it, that's good. If you didn't have any intention of reading, if you didn't realize you were reading it, so then everybody agrees that's no good. But if you knew you were reading, that's enough. And then
which is the same if you're in tefillah.
So, okay, so we're going to get to all those. Let's first try to understand conceptually. We'll get to the tefillah. We haven't even gotten to tefillah yet. That's a whole separate. So, okay, we'll get to it. And then the Talmid of Rabbi Yona has an interesting, Rabbi Yona of Gerondi in the back, in his commentary on the Rif on Brachos, he quotes three opinions, the Rashi and the Tosfos and others, and he doesn't like those all. He suggests a different shot, which is similar to the misasig way that we said it initially. His phrase is, Yatza hakol me'atzmo. The words just came out. You ever have that? You're reading the newspaper or you're reading a magazine and then somebody hears you talking. But you're not, you know, usually when you read a newspaper, you're not davening, you're not saying the words. And the president so-and-so did this and that and the other. That's not, you know, people don't do that. But sometimes when you're reading, sometimes you just start to, is this only happened to me? Is that never happens to anybody else? You just start saying the words. You don't have any intention at all of saying the words. None. But you're saying it. You're reading a report. You're reading an email from somebody. And you just start reading it. And the guy in the next cubicle, or your friend, or your spouse says, what are you reading over there? They hear you talking. So Rabbi Yonah says, that's what's going on here. That, everybody agrees, you're not Yotze. That's not mitzvah Srichas Kavana. Because there's no mindfulness there at all. There's no fulfillment there at all. Everybody agrees. If you're saying Kriya Shema, and the Kriya Shema is said in such a way that you don't even think that you're saying the words, then even if the words came out of your mouth, you're not Yotze. So this part of the Gemara is telling us what everybody agrees. So at minimal, when the Rambam says, V'lo kivein libo b'pasuk rishon, everybody agrees to that. So there's not such a chiddush there. That's not kavana at all.
So nobody makes the argument that you've done it a bazillion times before, so there's a lower level of consciousness that you know you're saying it.
Right, that's the thing. It's not adequate. The fact that there is this subconscious or, you know, lower level, there is a certain threshold beneath which we say it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter, even though... Now, I'm not saying it doesn't have an imprint on a person's soul. That may be true. But to fulfill the mitzvah of Kriya Shema, this is not enough. But this is only the bottom rung. Because then, above this, we now have to figure out, well, do they require kavana or not? Okay, we still have to figure out, this is just before we even get... The Rambam is saying you need kavana, which is going to be two layers up. This is just to say, korelagia, this is for sure, everybody agrees is no good. If you hold mitzvos ain't srichos kavana, then you don't need full kavana, but you need a little more than this. Well, what's in between? So perhaps, well, there's a difference between knowing that you're reading something and knowing that you're doing a mitzvah. Right? The base level that we said is out is not even recognizing that you're reading. What if somebody knows that they're reading? Somebody comes into the synagogue, they've never been to a shul before, you hand them a book, and you say, read this, and you give them a transliterated Shema. Are they in fulfillment?
Yes.
So they are intending to read, but they don't know there's a mitzvah of Shema. You didn't tell them they're fulfilling a mitzvah, so they don't have kavana for the Kiyam HaMitzvah. So the Rambam, assumably, it sounds like we'll say, they're not in fulfillment because they have to have kavana. Because even if you're having kavana for reading, that's not full kavana. That's just to get you in the door. Now you have the debate, mitzvah sichas kavana or not. Yeah.
Isn't there a difference, though, between a mitzvah like kriyat shema?
Okay, good. Yes.
Which is essentially a declaration of faith.
Okay. Good, very good. Yes.
Simple mitzvah, like putting on tefillin.
Great. Okay, very good. So let's come back to that in a little bit. Did you read the article from Professor Tashma? No? Are you sure? Are you being honest? So there is a... Okay. So this is one of the huge sugyas.
I may have read it, but I wasn't focused.
So, yes. So we're going to get... This is going to be the chiddush. I mean, it's... So there is an amazing article, a tremendous article, by the late Professor Yisrael Tashma. Professor Tashma was the professor of Judaic Studies at the Hebrew University. Very, very prominent scholar. He died...
Tashma?
Yeah, Tashma. Like, he's Babylonian. I don't remember what his original name
was.
he named himself... I don't remember what his original name was. Probably like Schwarzberg or something. I don't remember what it is. He was very, very prominent in Israeli academic circles. Huge. He was a gadol mamish. He was very, very big. Giant. I think he published 6 books and countless articles. So I was super excited because I found an article that Professor Tashma wrote in Tuf Shin Chaf, which is like in 1960, I think. Tuf Shin Chaf, I think, 1960. About kavana, and he makes a small one of the haaras that he, one of the observations he has in there is something that I was thinking. So I was like, that is amazing. I thought the same thing that Professor Toshma. Not too much. Let's not exaggerate. But we'll come back to that in a little bit. So this Rambam is telling you that you need to have kavana. Okay. But now if you look if you look on the next, you know, let me, before the next page, let's go to the supplemental page. But if you look on the supplemental pages, the first page of the packet, you start to run into page one on the supplement, you start to run into a question. And I could tell you, I did not do an exhaustive study of every commentary on the Rambam because it would take many months and perhaps years on this one issue alone. This is one of the famous, huge controversies in the Rambam. Because now the Rambam tells you here in Hilchos Chametz Matzah, Perek Vav, Halacha Gimel, Ochal Matzah below Kavana. If you ate matzah without kavana, kagon she'ansu goyim olistim. But if goyim, Gentiles, or bank robbers, gangsters, coerced you, lechol, yatza yidei chovaso. You did fulfill your obligation. So wait a second. In Kriya Shema, the Rambam said, I have to have kavana the first paragraph. The first sentence. The second sentence, the Rambam said, I don't have to have kavana. So which is it? Do you have to have kavana or do you not have to have kavana? Now the Rambam is telling me when it comes to matzah, I don't have to have kavana. Then I go to the next page in Hilchos Shofar, on page number 2. And this is all, these cases are all strung together in that sugya in Rosh Hashanah Chav Ches. Hamisasek, Halacha dal base dal hamisasik b'tkiyah shofel islamid lo yatsa yidei chovaso v'chein hashamei amin hamisasik lo yatsa. A person who's just misasik, just by the by, blowing the shofar, he's not yotsa yidei chovaso. So what's going on over here? I told you. The Rambam says I told you in Hilchos Matzah that you can be yotsa even if you didn't have kavana to fulfill the matzah, the mitzvah. Somebody forced you, and now we're saying that misasik b'tkiyah shofar is yotsa, so you do need kavana. Well, maybe you just needed not to be misasik, maybe you don't need kavana. What's going on? This is a big, big balagansky. So let's go back to the first packet, to the second Rambam that I wanted to focus on in detail, where the Rambam tells us the earlier in Hilchos Tefillah, the Rambam tells us that one of the things which is ma'akev tefillah is kavana salev, is attention. But the Rambam in Perek Yud, Halacha Aleph, says, Mishi Espala, somebody who davened, I'm on page 3 in the first packet, V'lo kivin es libo, yachzor v'yispala b'kavana. You should daven again with kavana. V'im kivin libo b'bracha rishona. If you had kavana in the first blessing, shuv eino tzarech, you don't need anymore. So when I saw this, I thought to myself, wait, isn't that interesting? Kriya Shema, you need kavana for the first sentence and not for the rest. Tefillah, you need kavana for the first bracha and not for the rest. I wondered, are those things connected? And then later on, as we'll mention, I saw that the Avi Ezri, Rabbi Lezer Shach, Zichron Levracha, in his commentary in the Rambam, he connects them. And I'm starting to wonder, there's got to be a pattern here. There have to be different levels of mindfulness. And somebody was alluding to this, Paul started with this, someone else mentioned it earlier. There have to be different areas of halacha with different thresholds of mindfulness. Maybe there are different kinds of mitzvahs. So who started me on this journey? So oftentimes when I learn the Rambam, Rav Schechter once taught us a fascinating, an interesting lesson to look at the Merkavas HaMishnah. Merkavas HaMishnah was authored by Reb Shlomo Lechelma, from Shlomo of Chelm, which is not always known historically for the most insightful wisdom. But in this case, this great Polish Gaon from Chelm wrote a tremendous Pirush on the Rambam. And Rav Schechter once made an offhand comment in the Shir that even though sometimes the Merkavas HaMishnah is very long, he is oftentimes very on target. So I've started in recent years, when we come up with a troubling Rambam, to look at the Merkavas HaMishnah, and oftentimes he just sets it all right. He's amazing. So back in the supplemental packets on page 4, you don't have to look at it inside. The Merkavas HaMishnah starts down this road. And he says, you know, don't get confused. Because until the Merkavas HaMishnah, if you look in the classic commentaries of the Rambam, right there, the Kesef Mishnah and the Mishnah Lamelech on those Rambams, everybody's bent out of shape. The Rambam doesn't make any sense at all. How could the Rambam tell you in one place that you need Kavana, in another place he tells you you don't need Kavana? Do you need Kavana or do you not? So the Merkavas HaMishnah, Reb Shlomo Michelm says, he says, calm down. He says, it depends where. Depends what you're talking about. The Rambam generally is of the opinion, this is a big machlokas Rishonim, he paskin, mitzvos ain't tzrichos kavana. Mitzvos do not require kavana. They don't. Generally. And by the way, the Shulchan Aruch also has two opinions. He quotes two deos, whether mitzvos tzrichos kavana or not. The Merkavas HaMishnah's opinion is that according to the Rambam, mitzvos ain't tzrichos kavana.
What about korbanot?
So, good question. So that will... It's a tough answer to that question because korbanos are unique. In the world of kachim, you require something additional, which I didn't even mention today, but you were... you can't get away from this group. You can. Everybody's on the ball. Korbanos require not just kavana, they require lishma. Lishma is even a higher level. So the Gemara has a drasha that misasek bekachim is no good. If you walked into a slaughterhouse and you saw a guy just mechanically shechting animals, that would be good. But it won't be good in kachim. Kachim requires a higher threshold for korbanos. It even requires lishma. So the Gemara then says, and this goes back to someone said before, well, you've done it 1,000 times before. Oh, this is what you were saying, Reb David. You said it 1,000 times before. We can say stama lishma. That's probably what you mean. So there, the Gemara in the beginning of Zvachim says, well, the Kohen did it yesterday. He did it the day before. So we stay stama lishma. But you're right. When it comes to korbanos, you have a higher threshold. That's number one for the Kohen. And also for the person. I own a korban. I give it to the Kohen to be makriv. If it's a chatas, if it's a korban that's coming on a chait, I have to do the tshuva. You can't do tshuva without kavana. You know, that's no tshuva at all. So that's a higher threshold. Korbanos have a higher threshold, especially with lishma. But that's, by the way, not the only requirement for lishma. Matzah, baking matzah requires lishma, even though it's not formally a mitzvah. So if you ever go to a matzah bakery, growing up in our shtibel, they converted the garage into a matzah bakery at that time. I'm not sure that the fire department had ever investigated the code violations that had gone into that matzah bakery. But everybody was always yelling, L'shem matzah's mitzvah, because kavana there meant something more. You needed more than just kavana. You needed the same. The guys are, I saw there's a group here that's tying tzitzis. It's got to be lishma. So there, it's an added level of kavana.
Is it each knot they do it at, or just the first time?
So it's a good quote. Tevia lishma, kshira lishma, which knot, all good ha'aris. But then Rav Shlomo Chelmer starts on the path that we're talking about. He says, okay, number one, mitzvah ain't tzrichas kavana. Then he says, number two, well, the Gemara Rosh Hashanah, there's a difference between me doing a mitzvah and me being motzi you doing a mitzvah. He says, maybe I don't need kavana to be yotzei mitzvah, but to be motzi somebody else, then maybe I need a higher threshold. And then he gets to his third point, which is, well, Kriya Shema is different. He says you need what he calls Kavanas Halev for Kriya Shema, for the first pasuk. What is Kriya Shema's Kavanas Halev? He says that's Pirush Hamilos, understanding the meaning of the words. Translation. But what's the big, you know, earth-shattering chiddush of this Reb Shlomo Lechelmer of the Merkavas HaMishnah? That different mitzvahs are different. And someone said before, who said it? That Shema sounds different than just shaking a lulav. Someone said that before. So he says Shema is different than all other mitzvahs. Why? So you can take it a step further. So Professor Tashma sends you to a Rashba. And this is the Rashba, page 5 in the supplemental, if you want to take a look at it. The Rashba raises the Rambam. Remember, the Rashba is living in the 14th century. The Rambam dies in 1204. The Rashba has the Rambam And so we are now struggling with the Rambam. Just think about this for 1 second before we move on. And if you're Rav Shlomo ben Aderet, his commentary on the Gemara in Brachos, we are studying the same Rashba that Rav Shlomo ben Aderet studied in Barcelona 700 years ago. Right now, right here. Just think about that for a second. The Rashba quotes the Rambam, and he says, but it's a stira on the Rambam, it doesn't make any sense. So he has a very long commentary, and then at the end, he has a suggestion for the Gemara, because the truth is, when you look at the Gemara inside, there's something weird. On Amud Beis, which was the first statement of the Rambam, that you need Kavana for the first line of Shema, the Gemara does not say from there, oh, Reb Meir must hold, mitzvos require Kavana. Why not? Isn't that a proof? You need Kavana for a mitzvah? Reb Meir says, you need to have Kavana for the first line of Shema. Isn't that a proof that all mitzvahs require Kavana?
No, it's the opposite. If you're saying only this specific pasuk needs Kavana, then presumably everything else doesn't.
Oh, very good. So the Ramban in the Melchamas, the Ramban wrote a commentary on the Rif in the end of Rosh Hashanah. The Ramban says, you know what I think? I can be Madche David Polster. He was Mechavan to you. And he says, I think, the Ramban says, that Reb Meir must hold, it's a machlokas in the Tanoim, that only the first bracha is ma'akev, first pasuk is ma'akev. If you said that, that's the end. So then you now go back and say, oh, it's a raya. Shouldn't that be a nice raya? And that would fit with the Manda Amar who says mitzvah srichas kavana. That might be the other way to, because there's a machlokas. Until what point do you say you actually fulfilled it? Let's say a person only said the first line of Shema, and then, I don't want to say this ever happened to me on a Friday night, maybe they kind of dozed off in the middle of Shema, and then they wake up and they're somewhere in Hashkivenu, or the Chazan is in Hashkivenu, and they don't even know where they are. I don't want to say if this ever happened to me, but maybe once it happened. On a Friday night, you're in the middle of Shema, you fall asleep. So were you Yotze? You didn't say it. I'm not talking about where you were like, Misnamnus, no. I'm saying you were totally out. Totally out. Where someone has to knock on your shoulder and say, stand up, everyone's saying Shemon Esrei. So that's, the Ramban discusses that side. But if, well, let's say you hold, no, the whole thing is the mitzvah. The Rashba says something amazing. He says, I got it when it comes to regular mitzvos. But on line number 12 here in the Rashba, he says, on the right hand side, he says, Avol Elu, Shein Kabolas, Ol Malchus Shamayim, O Sidur Shvachim, Eino Bedin, Shei Levavo Pon L'Dvar Macherim. The mitzvah of Shema, it's not a mitzvah of mechanical recitation. It's Kabbalah Ol Malchus Shamayim. It's a declaration of faith. It's accepting upon yourself the kingship of God. So if you're thinking something else, then how could you be engaged in taking God's presence into your mind? If it's about Kabbalah Ol Malchus Shamayim. So the Rashba says, maybe that's different. That's why that line in the Gemara that says, Reb Meir says, the first word you need to have Kabbalah Ol Malchus Shamayim, you need to have Kavana, because that's not regular Kavana, that's specialty Kavana. That's, you know, 1K global status Kavana. That's the premier line Kavana on the check-in, you know, where they have the little carpet. That's the carpet Kavana. Not the, you know, the regular ones of us. We just walk in, we just get on the plane. The others, the special guys who have the status, you walk on the carpet. I don't know what that does, but it should make you feel good. You walk on that little, you ever figure that why it is that you have to get, I don't know. I'm just saying.
You don't have to wait online.
No, I board at the end. Nobody wants my kids on the plane any more than they have to. Everybody, we wait for the final boarding call, then we get everybody on. But that's the difference, says the Rashba. The mitzvah of Kriya Shema, it's not stam saying words. It's the experience of Kabbalah Ol Malchus Shamayim. So how could you do that if you're thinking about the golf game? Or if you think about the shopping list, then you're not. So where is Kabbalah Ol Malchus Shamayim? Just the first sentence. So that's where you need it. So now, going back to Reb Shlomo of Chelm, it makes perfect sense. He calls it Pirush HaMilos, but we could use the Rashba's language to say that the first pasuk of Shema is different. It's not like every other mitzvah. You're right! The Rambam would say, in every other mitzvah, mitzvahs ain't srichas kavana. Mitzvahs ain't srichas kavana means, of course, you can't be, you know, thinking that the sound of the shofar is the sound of an animal, like the Gemara discusses. You can't be literally not there at all. You have to have some basic recognition of what's happening. But more than that, you don't need. You don't need to have kavana that you're doing a mitzvah. But Shema, the whole thing is the kavana. The whole thing is the Kabbalah Zomach HaShemayim. Well now, with this understanding, maybe we can apply this to davening. Is davening just saying words? Is it saying words? So later on the supplementary packet on page 6, you have a selection here from the Gaon Rav Chaim HaLevi Soloveitchik. In the Chidush Rav Chaim HaLevi on the Rambam, Rav Chaim raises this problem of Kavana in the Rambam because, as we mentioned, the Rambam told us that we saw in Perek Yud that you have to have Kavana for the first bracha of Shemona Esrei. The problem is, Rav Chaim here is in Perek Dalet Halacha Aleph, where he says there are five things that are ma'akev. The Rambam says there are five things that are ma'akev that impede tefillah, and one is Kavanas Halev. And the Rambam says that if you didn't have Kavana, you have to daven again. So you know what Rav Chaim says? He says a brisker vort, two kinds of kavana. One kavana is understanding the words. The other kavana is the recognition that you are standing before God. So now Rav Chaim says a huge chiddush. He says, for the first bracha of Shemona Esrei, you need both kavanas. You need to feel that you're standing before God, and you need to know the meaning of the words that you're saying. You have to have Pirush Hamilos. For the rest of Shemona Esrei, Reb Chaim says the following Chiddush. He says, you're right, you don't need to know what you're saying. But at least, at minimum, you need to know that you're standing before God. If you don't realize that you're standing before God, if you're not thinking about the fact, conscious of the fact that you're standing before God, then what is tefillah at all? Whew. That's pretty intense.
Then why wouldn't you dab in English?
Then you should. Yes. No question, you should definitely daven in English. Someone who doesn't know the Hebrew, of course they should daven in English, for sure. Yeah. It says in the Mishnah Berurah, it says in Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch says, a person doesn't know how to daven, and that's not just davening. Shulchan Aruch says it about, the Gemara says it about, in the end of Masechah Sota, about benching. A person who says benching, they have no idea what they're talking about. So they should say it in English. Now, it's a good thing to try to educate people who eventually should learn the Hebrew, because there's obviously a lot of depth and segulas and special meaning to the Hebrew. But of course, a person doesn't know, they should of course do it in English. So here comes the chiddush of this Rav Chaim, and the Chazon Ish, you see in the middle section here, the Chazon Ish did not agree with this. Because according to this, you know, I didn't ever see this happen. You know, you're davening, and then you started Baruch Aleinu, and all of a sudden now your head is, you know, you have an inner ear that watches your balance. Your inner ear is telling you, my head is lowered. Ooh. You ever have that? You started Baruch Aleinu, you started like Velam Al Shinim, and now my head is going down. Why is my head going down? Because I'm at Modim in the Siddur. You ever have that? Everyone's looking at me blankly. Baruch Hashem, everyone here has perfect Kavana. So I don't have this problem. Sometimes I'll have this. I'm like, why am I bowing? I thought I was in Refainu. No, I'm not. I'm in the Modim now. Ta-da! Or there was a story of a Chassidish Rebbe who was davening Shemon Esrei, and the guy next to him is davening Shemon Esrei, and they both finish Shemon Esrei, and after davening the Shemon Esrei, he looks at the next guy and he says to him, Shalom Aleichem, welcome back. And the guy says, what do you mean, welcome back? And the rabbi says, well, I figured you were in Leipzig at the fair, and then you were at the lunch delicatessen, and now you walk back into the shul. After Shemon Esrei, you finished all your errands. Isn't that the truth? So the Chazon Ish says to Rav Chaim, your standard of davening is really high. You want to know why there are different minhagim by different rebbes, by different great rabbis about how to daven? Some people, they daven very pious people, they daven very long. And some people, they daven very short. You know why? Because I once heard a great mashal. They said if you're driving a chariot, or today you would say, if you're driving a car and somebody's trying to catch you, you drive fast. So the Yetzer is trying to get you to be distracted. So some people, they're very pious, they have tremendous kavana, they daven the fastest Shemon Esrei ever because they want to have kavana, they want to be in the moment. So they say the words quickly because their mamish focus zeroed in. Not this saying the words because, you know, they're trying to get through it because their mamish there. So there's two different drachim, but according to Reb Chaim, this is a high threshold. Because for Shmones, oh, but you could say the opposite. You could disagree with Reb Chaim, and this is what on the bottom Rav Shach says in the Avi Ezri in his Pirush on this Rambam, and it goes back to, I think, the way we could suggest is the model of Kriyishma, following the Rashba in the interpretation of Kriyishma, which is, maybe we could suggest like this, and this is my words in reframing the Avi Ezri. And so to summarize where we are, just to make sure we haven't lost you yet, we're trying to figure out what level of mindfulness is required for mitzvos. And we're suggesting that, according to the Rambam, perhaps, you don't require mindfulness for mitzvos, generally. Now, that is notwithstanding, of course, there is some basic level, but we're talking about, when you talk about kavana for a mitzvah, right? You require the basic, I would say, consciousness, but you don't require kavana for a mitzvah, as opposed to two areas, Shema and Shemona Esrei. And Rav Shach says it's not coincidental that in each case, the first element requires the special intent, the special kavana. In Shema, it's because it's Kabbalah's Ol Malchus Shemayim. And in Shemona Esrei, it's because it's the first bracha. So the language of Rav Shach is the idea that if you don't have that recognition, then there's nothing, there's no experience of davening happening here. You need to begin, you need to set the chalos of a maisa of tefillah. There needs to be something on which the experience of tefillah to be chal. And so even if the rest of the tefillah isn't with attentiveness, but you're continuing an actual experience of tefillah. And that is that you are, if you look on the bottom of page 6, for those who are there, im tchiloso mechavin lehispal lekaimetzes tefillah, af shebeisa tefillah na mechavin pirush amila supashet. As long as you initially had that kavana, that you're standing before God and you understand what you're saying, then the rest is just considered a continuation, both for Kriyishma and for Tefillah. Yeah.
Is there a concept in any of the sources that one size does not fit all?
Okay.
In other words, depending on who it is. Right? So the guy that gets slapped off the street into the mitzvah van and they slap on the tefillah and he has
yes.
no idea what he's doing, right? That he may have a different level that may be sufficient. Where that person is.
So I would say like
the
this.
The cartoon at the Rosh Yeshiva or the Rebbe, right, putting on tefillin with the same level of kavana, right, it would not be. So perhaps is this idea depends on the individual. What is their minimum level of kavana?
So I would say yes and no. Maybe we could give a medical analogy. So we have some physicians in this room. So I suspect that you could draw the following analogy. Let's say a person could subsist on a certain level of diet, a certain amount of nutrients and echves, what do we need? Protein. We need certain things. And then there are certain things to create optimal performance. Certain vitamins that we have, certain other nutrients. Doctor, am I so far so good? Okay. So you can have a patient who presents themselves and they could be a very well-meaning patient. And they're nice, and they want to do the right thing, but they're not meeting their basic level of sustenance. Sometimes, unfortunately, let's say with elderly patients, they don't have an appetite anymore. You know, they have challenges eating. I know this from some people who I've encountered. And people, the doctors and their family members need to push them to get enough calories and to get enough. So in a certain sense, you have the same thing when it comes to halacha. There is a basic threshold that everybody needs to say, to check that box to say you did a mitzvah. Above and beyond that, of course there are levels. So you have people who are in physical condition that they can run a marathon. And that's because their performance, the nutrients that they're ingesting and the health that they're in, that's at peak performance. So in this room, there are people whose spiritual performance is at, you know, a basic level. And then there are people who are at our peak, and then there's everything in between. So there are definitely levels. But there is a level at which the physician will say, this is not enough caloric intake to be considered eating for today. You didn't eat today. You look like you ate today. You thought you ate today, but you did not. We can't say that you, our patient, ate today. You must have, you know, you must go home and drink Gatorade or vitamin water, and you must have this amount of food. I'm not talking vitamins. You want to go run a marathon? I'll give you the regimen of vitamins and nutrients. So the same thing is true here. In halacha, there is a basic threshold that everybody has to meet, whether they came off the street or not. At the same time, we're all striving for a much higher level than just subsistence. You know? Yeah.
So someone's wedding day. They're not here for that's right, because they don't have kavanah for Shmona Esrei. I'm for Shmona Kirushin.
Okay.
But it's possible they do. So, like,
okay, so
if you have a husband with like his guest,
great.
You know, we're davening, like, how do you?
So that's a it's a good practical question. In the time of the Gemara, a chasam was part from Kriya Shema. I think today many people don't rely on that p'tur. They do daven because
nobody's going to
that. Exactly. So the question about kavanah today, so that's a good question in terms of whether practically a chasam should not daven. And yes, you see that sometimes when a person can't have kavanah, maybe an example would be, God forbid, it's not 100% example of kavanah, but it's certainly related, an onein. An onein is not in a frame of mind to make brachos. So chazal pater that person from brachos. They're exempt from mitzvos because they're preoccupied with something else unless somebody else is on their behalf is taking care of it. Yes, okay. So to summarize now, I think we could take it one small step further and then conclude, which is Professor Toshma is not happy about the comment of the Magid Mishnah in the context of Tkiyah Shofar. Why did the Rambam say in Tkiyah Shofar you need to have Kavanah if the Rambam thinks you don't need Kavanah? So the Merkevas HaMishnah said it's because you motzi others, which is similar to what Professor Toshma says, although he doesn't quote the Merkevas HaMishnah. But the Magid Mishnah says, well, and Professor Toshma doesn't like this, but the Magid Mishnah says, well, maybe there's a difference between Tkiyah Shofar, where the mitzvah is listening, Shmia, and other mitzvahs where the mitzvah is doing. So based on what we've said until now, maybe we have a new appreciation of the Magid Mishnah's interpretation. What happens when a person hears the shofar? Is the mitzvah just hearing the sound? Or is because the mitzvah, the shmia, what it's trying to say is there's a mitzvah that is being communicated non-verbally? Or, to take even a step further, as Rav Soloveitchik and many others explain, that the shofar, the sound of the shofar, is a wordless prayer. It's the ultimate tefillah of the neshama. So if that's true, we said that if a person has a tefillah with no kavanah, even though mitzvahs ain't tzrichas kavanah, but that's not a tefillah. So maybe that's the pshat with the shofar, what the Magid Mishnah is saying. Shofar is special. Because the shofar is like a tefillah of the neshama, that's a tzaka. And if there's no mindfulness there, that you are engaged in connecting with Hashem through that primal scream of the shofar, then you've missed the shofar. Maybe shofar is also different. Maybe shofar can be grouped with kriyashma and tefillah, because they're all this higher threshold of consciousness. So to summarize, we said at the bottom level, misasik is no good. You have to know that you're doing the action that you're doing. We said that the Rambam's opinion, according to many achronim, is mitzvahs ain't tzriches kavanah, but it's 2 days in Shulchan Aruch. So yes, when you are doing mitzvahs, you should know that you're doing the mitzvah, and then in halacha, there becomes a big tumult about why Hasidim say l'shem yichud. This is the tshuva of the Nodi Behuda. Should you say l'shem yichud, do you not need it? Based on what we're saying now, this is part of the discussion that you should have kavanah, but do you need to say l'shem yichud? You know, not necessarily. But then ultimately what we're saying is that there are certain experiences in our spiritual life, in our yadus, that definitionally require mindfulness. Kriyashma, Kabbalah Sal Malchus Shemayim, Tefillah, and maybe Shofar, Those are experiences that are all about mindfulness. It's about our frame of mind. And if our mindfulness is not there, even if in other cases, wrapping tefillin, they just wrap them and they take them off. If that's technically good enough, but that's only good enough for tefillin. It's obviously not the ideal. The ideal is to create mindfulness everywhere, but it's not enough in these cases. And I think what that creates is an aspirational hierarchy that says, okay, don't despair if you didn't have kavana. You know, we should be working not to despair, but to realize that there are these levels and that we want to continue to grow in our mitzvah observance, in our connection to Hashem. And to do that, we need to constantly refresh and increase our mindfulness. Just go ahead. Have a great day.